Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend's edition, also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. Boy, oh boy, it was a busy week to start off Q4 as we saw some bigger moves in the markets. To kick off this week, a little bit of settle down as we came to the end of the week, but again, a noteworthy start to Q4. I'm very excited to announce to kick off this show, we are chatting with Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer over at Bleakley Financial Group, also editor of the Book Report website, which we will link to in the weekend show posting. Now, Peter, Shad and I are going to be seeing you at the New Orleans Investment Conference next week, starting on Wednesday. Before we get into more individual market comments, I have to ask you, your presentation is entitled Everything is Clear as Mud, referring to the markets and the broad economic outlook. Take us through what you're going to be talking about and why you think everything is just so muddy in terms of forward projections.
Well, I think to me, it's on one hand, it's somewhat clear about the situation we're in right now, in the sense of we know we have elevated inflation that central banks are aggressively responding to, and global growth is slowing down. But how it plays out from here, I think is really, really tricky. And even, you know, take the U.S. economy, for example. Even within the U.S. economy, it's unusual in that you have a labor market that's still hanging in there. I emphasize hanging in there because there are definite signs of softening, but hanging in there relative to where other parts of the economy are beginning to crack, particularly housing and possibly other parts. But how this all plays out, how it plays out with Putin, how it plays out with, say, the European energy situation, how much further the Fed pushes this, even though they've told us what they want to do, but whether they actually do it, we'll have to see where profit margins go from here, whether we get a mild recession or a deep one. I mean, I'm never shy of having an opinion, and every single one of my New Orleans presentations have been pretty definitive with my opinions. I remember in November 2020, giving my presentation in New Orleans, saying that inflation is here, and then where inflation is coming, and then my 2021 was inflation is here, and I was pretty confident about that. This time around, it's a lot trickier. And while I think that the macro situation is going to remain very tough, trying to actually sort of draw a potential blueprint from here is really difficult.
Yeah, you said it, Peter, because it's really a bifurcated market. I mean, it's strange to have high inflation but also have a strong dollar. It's strong to have what seems like a recession on many metrics, whether it's the PMI numbers being below 50, the two quarters of negative GDP, weakness in the housing market, but to your point, strong labor market. So it's really hard to get a handle on which direction things are going to go. It seems like a prime driver in a lot of the markets right now, though, is the yields. And the big story is that for the last 40 years, bonds were seen as a safe haven. People would go there during market tantrums or during uncertainty. But bonds have been selling off pretty hard and rates have been ratcheting higher. What's your outlook on the bonds and interest rate markets, all things considered?
Well, I think it's important right now to separate out different parts of the yield curve. I think that the short end of the U.S. yield curve, you know, it seems that the Fed, we'll talk about the U.S. curve right now, is intent on getting the Fed funds rate to 4.5. And that's what they've thrown out there. And it seems that that is what the Fed funds futures market has essentially priced in. So with the two-year yield at, call it 4.20, it seems that we probably priced in all of the Fed rate hikes. The longer end is, I think, much more difficult to figure out because the influences on the longer end is not just what you think inflation and growth is going to play out from here, and it's as simple as that. You know, the major cross currents of this global bond bubble we've been in that is now unwinding, and how that plays out, it's difficult to say. I mean, how does the ECB manage tightening policy there, and what happens to the European bond market if they ever get to QT? How much longer is the Bank of Japan going to be able to keep yield curve control in place? And what if they decide, you know what, we need to widen the band? You can potentially have an earthquake through the world's bond markets. How does the U.S. Treasury market manage QT here at the same time that foreigners have been, over the last couple of years, shrinking their ownership of U.S. Treasuries relative to the total, and banks are buying less Treasuries, and who's going to be that marginal buyer? So I think the longer end is much more difficult to say. Now, if it was just an inflation and growth story, I'd say, yeah, buy the 10-year. You know, inflation is peaking out, growth is slowing, buy the 10-year. But it's just much more complicated than that. And that's why I'm much more comfortable owning short-term Treasuries than I am longer-term ones. And that's the same for, well, it's mostly for the U.S., but in some other bond markets as well outside the U.S.
So, Peter, when we relate what interest rates have done to what the Fed and other central banks are mostly doing, that is going through some quantitative tightening. Look, I think we all agree that we are reaching somewhere near the end of the rate hiking cycle, but we hear so many comments about a Fed pivot and how they're going to have to pivot next year, and if they're even going to start cutting rates early on next year or later on next year. I think there's a big difference between raising rates as aggressively as they had and then staying at, let's say, that 4-4.5% level, or if they do start cutting again, which it does seem like the market always wants lower rates and rate cuts. How do you see this playing out? What is the process going to be in your eyes?
Well, it seems that they're pretty intent on raising. I think they'll raise another 100 basis points through the end of the year. And I think that'll be it. I think that they're going to be the pressure points, the pain points, will start to get extreme enough that it will get the Fed to stop or at least pause. And usually when they pause, that'll be it. I'm not as clear, though, on how they'll manage the balance sheet within that, because there are issues growing behind the scenes with the balance sheet and the sharp decline in bank reserves. So I don't think the Fed's going to be able to get away with nearly as much QT as they hope to. But I think, yeah, November, December will be the last rate hikes, I believe. And then the question, though, is, okay, they're just going to hike, take it to the 4%-ish level, and then just stop. And if the economy starts to really break down, do they start to cut? Or are they so obsessed and convinced that inflation is still high and that they can't take their foot off sort of that economic brake, that will prevent them from cutting? But the days of them tightening us into recession and rates going right back to zero again and QE is on, I think that's over. I think that's going to be the differentiating factor of this rate hiking into cutting cycle compared to others, and that we can't just rely on the Fed. Now, I know the market's all excited, and, you know, maybe the Fed will stop hiking, but that's quite different from them shifting to a sharp rate cutting cycle, which, again, we've been so accustomed to.
Well, I think that's a good point, that they could pause and just keep rates where they're at for quite some time just to see if the lagging effects of their policy kick in. And the other thing would be, what would happen, Peter, if inflation really doesn't ratchet down as much as they're expecting? I mean, at one point, the market was pretty sure things were going to go back to a 2% CPI reading. We're pretty far divorced from that now when it's still over 8%. But let's just say that inflation stays at 6% or 5% and the Fed can't hike any further. What does that mean for the economy, and what would that mean for their policies moving forward?
Well, with respect to their policies moving forward, I mean, we'll have to see whether there were any lessons learned, both in terms of the extreme easing that they put in place and how lagged their hiking was. Only in the next economic recession and downturn will we see. And yeah, you point out what I said is that it going up to 4 and then leaving it there is a different environment than we're used to. And that means that the economy in total is going to have to deal with a higher cost of capital for a longer period of time. And you threw out the 8% inflation rate, which is what we're seeing. But I think that settles down to about 6-ish by year end. And then the question is where does it settle down next year? And how soon does it go back to the pre-COVID benign environment of 1-2? And while maybe on the downside it overshoots to 1-2, I think we're going to have to get used to a more sustainable inflation rate of something around 3-4, which will keep the Fed funds rate probably elevated, but also at the same time limits the Fed to react if they want to shift their focus over to the employment side again.
Such a different environment this year for markets, and it does sound like that's going to carry over, especially with broader higher inflation. Peter, how much do you think this higher inflation also is due to China still being kind of in and out of lockdown, their zero COVID policy, as well as that ongoing war in Ukraine that has definitely increased inflation for the European citizens?
Well, it definitely has made analyzing the economy a lot more difficult. I am hopeful, though, that after the Party Congress and into the first quarter of next year, that China is going to further open up. And I think that we're sort of getting the early whiff of that with what's going on with Hong Kong, with them ending the hotel quarantine, even though they still have further to go with respect to allowing people to immediately land and go eat out for dinner. And they are opening up Macau more through travel tours. So to me, that's sort of the test tube for a broader reopening, which we're going to get, which would be a definite positive for the global economy, but it would also probably exaggerate again inflation trends, because you can imagine where the price of oil may go if China fully opens up. With respect to Russia, I mean, it's no central bank is going to be able to game that. They're just going to respond to what's going on today. There's no legitimate forecast that they can possibly give on what that means for energy prices, call it 3, 6, 12 months from now.
Peter, what's your take on the energy market with OPEC deciding that they're going to do some production cuts? Some of those countries actually need a higher price of oil in the 90s, even pushing 100 for their break evens. And the energy picture has been tight, but we've seen a nice rollover in the oil price. It was at 125. It dipped down to the high 70s. Now it's back in the mid 80s. What's your outlook on oil and net gas?
So I acknowledge the demand side slowing because of the recession. There's no doubt that that's going to be a drag, but I am pretty confident that the supply side is going to remain very challenged, and the lack of investment for years has now caught up with us, and that even with oil at almost $90 is still not bringing out a lot of drilling, and that rig counts are still well below where they were, and there's a lot of discipline coming out of OPEC, as you mentioned, and that oil prices are going to remain elevated for a period of time. And when China opens up, as I mentioned, the oil prices are probably going to jump right back to $100 plus. And the risk is, to me, is still to the upside with the price of oil and natural gas.
So one market that has been a standout this year that has really shown where money has flown into that more safe haven trade has been the U.S. dollar for a number of different reasons, but the U.S. dollar recently broke above 110 and then came back, tested that level again. And this week, at the tail end of this week, is bouncing strongly off that 110 level. Peter, again, it seems like the only thing that's gone up this year has been the dollar, and most everything else has faded in the face of that. How long do you think the dollar can remain strong, and what do you think are the main factors pushing the dollar higher?
I think the main factor, and really only factor in my eyes, is the aggressive Fed relative to other central banks. I don't think it's more than that. I mean, look at two aggressive central banks in Mexico and Brazil. Those currencies have acted amazingly well against the U.S. dollar. So if they're trading well against the dollar, I can tie that directly to their monetary policy. At least in Brazil, they were raising rates in 2021. So to me, that's a great example, this being really just an interest rate differential story with the dollar relative to others. And it doesn't take much to rally against the euro when they have 9% inflation and a deposit rate at 75 basis points. And you look at even in the UK, where they're tiptoeing their way to rate hikes, and while inflation's running north of 10%. It doesn't take much to think that the dollar's going to rally against the yen when the Bank of Japan is maintaining its yield curve control. And what's going on against the yuan, because they can't get off their COVID policy. So, you know, I hear a lot of theories on the dollar and shortages of dollars and this and that. But to me, this is just a plain vanilla interest rate differential. The Fed is more aggressive than most other central bank dollar rally. And then once the Fed shows their hands and that they're done and they can no longer take the pain anymore of what they're inflicting, then this dollar rally is going to flame right out.
Well, Peter, just on this topic of safe havens and everybody flooding into the dollar as a safe haven, at least here in the States and even some foreign investors, we mentioned that bonds really haven't acted like a safe haven in people's portfolios for the last 2 years, ever since they've rolled over. But gold was also seen as another safe haven. And it was also supposed to be an inflation hedge. At least that's what we heard for the last decade. And in the face of high inflation, it really didn't perform like many expected. Is gold still a safe haven? Is it still a monetary metal, or is its role in people's portfolios starting to change?
Well, it's been amazing how not a inflation hedge it's been over the last couple of years. Now, you could argue that the physical market is telling a different story than the paper market, but you know, we live the paper market every day, so that's what we'll talk about. But I think the underperformance in gold and silver the past couple of years is definitely in response to that aggressive Fed that we just talked about. That said, gold is down about 7% this year. So compared to the stock market and the bond market, gold has outperformed. If you want to look at gold over the past 22 years, relative to the stock market, gold's outperformed. Now, of course, you can pick and choose any time frame, but gold's really been trading off the dollar and real rates. But real rates, not real rates. When I say real rates, I'm talking about real rates in the tips market rather than the actual front month real rate, where the Fed funds rate's at 3 and the inflation's at 8. And then you have negative real rates on front month CPI, the deepest since the 1970s. But you're trading, you know, the paper gold market versus the paper tips market, and that's what you get, a challenging environment for gold and silver. But they've begun to trade better of late. I think the Bank of England intervention kicked off a nice rally. Silver has been trading well the past couple of weeks, particularly against gold. And I just wonder whether it's the market beginning to sniff out that we're closer to the end of this rate hiking cycle by the Fed.
What else do you think benefits then if we are closer, or the market at least thinks we're closer to the end of this rate hiking cycle? What sectors in your eyes could potentially truly stand out?
Most things international markets, particularly in Asia, I think, will be a big beneficiary of the Fed almost being done. Emerging market bonds are going to do well when the Fed's done. A lot of non-dollar assets will do well when the Fed's done. Now, it's stating the obvious, but I think it's something that people should be looking at because there are tremendous values in the things that I mentioned.
Well, Peter, another area that we should probably touch on briefly is just the general markets. We haven't touched on those yet, and we're getting ready to have the third quarter operation results and earnings reports come in. And with inflation staying high, cost input staying high, labor being high, many are worried that the E side of it, of the PE ratios, is going to come down. And the concern would be, if the E side of the PE ratio comes down, shouldn't the P side of it come down?
Right. Well, most of the bear market has been valuation readjustment down. That's sort of been the first phase of the bear market. The second phase is the economic impact of the rate hikes and what that means for earnings. And we're about to get a flood of that over the next month to 6 weeks. And I think earnings are going to be negatively impacted by both slowing revenue growth and a challenge to profit margins. So I think that's sort of the next thing to break in markets, and we're going to get disappointment with respect to that earnings picture.
All right, Peter, great chatting with you. thank you again for sharing your thoughts on these markets and giving us a little preview of what you're going to be talking about at that upcoming New Orleans Investment Conference. We hope to see all of you there, or at least some of our listeners there. Please reach out to Shad and I if you will be in New Orleans, and we will make time to have a coffee, have a beer with you, and walk around that exhibit hall. Peter, again, thank you for your time. I look forward to seeing you in New Orleans next week.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Same here.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.